Welcome to Home and Family Finance with Paul Barry. It's your family, it's your finances, and it's your future. Home and Family Finance is sponsored by the Defense Credit Union Council, serving those who serve our country, and by CUNA, the Credit Union National Association. Now, here's the host of Home and Family Finance, Paul Barry.
And as always, thank you so much for joining us here on Home and Family Finance. We again ask the question, are you financially fit when it comes to your home, your family, and your future? And what are the things that affect that? Well, we're going to talk about that today with my first guest, Tom Davis. He is now an author, but I knew him as a former congressman from the great state of Virginia. He'll be joining us to talk about his new book called The Partisan Divide. And then we're going to switch over and find Mr. Alex Wallen. He's 27 years old. He started a new company called SprinkleBit. It's for the new investor, but is he serious? He says he is. We'll find out. And finally, Jody Gastfriend. As you know, all of us are headed in the same direction. And what about those senior finances? Are you looking after your mom and dad? Do you know where they are? And do you know what you're going to have to do and help them out? And now is the time to get started. Jody will be here to talk about, you know, how we ought to handle elder care when it comes to finances. But first, my first guest. You know, folks, what happens in Washington, D.C.? Affects all of us financially. The decisions that are made by those people that you send up to Congress are the people that will have an impact on your pocketbook. And no one knows that any better than a gentleman that I've had the pleasure of knowing for many years. I covered him as a reporter when he was a member of Congress from Virginia. He's one of the most respected he was respected then and a former congressman with a great eye. And he's watching what's happening in Washington to the degree that something provoked him to write this book called The Partisan Divide. Tom Davis, welcome to Home and Family Finance.
Hey, Paul. Thanks for having me.
I've never known you as an author of this type, although I know you're a deep thinker. I think the book, and I've had a chance to read some of the passages in it, and you're actually challenging an age-old Speaker Tip O'Neill position that all politics is local. How dare you, Tom?
Well, we've just outgrown it, basically. We have evolved or devolved basically into parliamentary voting habits today, where people in the old days were voted for the person, now they're voting the party. And what it means is that we call this behavior in a parliamentary manner, like it's a parliamentary system. Mm-hmm. Of course, it's not a parliamentary system. It's a balance of powers government. It doesn't fit very well. But so people are going out and voting party over person, and we document this pretty well. My co-author, by the way,
yes,
Martin Frost, was a Democratic congressional campaign chairman, and I had been a Republican campaign chairman. We started comparing notes about what had happened and thought we ought to collaborate and let people know that this is the reality. This isn't just a kind of opinion of a couple guys who left Congress. I like to say I left undefeated and unindicted and kind of walked away from it after a career as a leader and committee chairman.
Why did you stop? Why did you lead? Are you popular?
I was termed out as a committee chairman. They termed me out after three terms, and I was just ready for something else. As you know, I've been a political junkie all these years, but it was time to do something else, and we saw the system moving into what it is, where it was just hard to get things done. So the thesis of the book, basically, though, voters are behaving at voting straight tickets. The only race that matters to most members when they run and but most candidates is the nomination, because 80% of the House districts are now apportioned in such a way that we know what party it's going to end up with in November. November is nothing more than a constitutional formality. Right. It's the primaries that count. And so
win the primary, you win the election.
Yeah, you win the primary, you win the election. So all your attention, your voting habits, your rhetoric is toward the primary voters. And as I said before, that's what counts. And primary voters are a very thin ideological slice of the electorate. They're not representative of the electorate as a whole. But it makes compromise just a lot more difficult. And it means that when members get elected and they come to Washington, they no longer consider themselves members of the minority party. You're the opposition party.
Wow.
That means I'm no on everything. Everything is filibustered. You guys control it. You put the votes up. And it makes it very hard to get things done.
So did we do this to ourselves, or did someone do this to us?
Well, it's a little of both. I mean, as long as the voters tolerate it, this is what's going to happen. And the way that districts are aligned and stuff, it makes hard for voters to come together and make changes overnight. But it's not just the single-party districts that have emerged. It's also two other macro factors. One are these media outlets now. They have successful business models of giving news to an ideological slice of things. So you see this on talk radio, you see this in cable news, and you certainly see it on the internet, where people tune in to what they want to hear, and they are fed this stuff every day. And some of these business models are very successful, but they really don't pull one toward compromise. They bring one. They tend to be very divisive in terms of outcomes. And then the final factor that has come together in the last 20 years is campaign finance has moved from the political parties, which under McCain-Feingold, they were prohibited from taking soft money.
Yes.
But that money didn't disappear. It's gone from the political parties, which have been a centering force in American politics for 200 years, out to the wings, to more ideological groups that play in primaries. And the combination of these three, we call macro factors, have been just combustible in terms of the polarization.
We're talking with Tom Davis. Tom is the author of a new book, which you have to get. It's called The Partisan Divide. The Partisan Divide, folks. And what Tom is talking about is where we're headed politically. But is compromise dead? And if it is, can a democratic system survive without that? And what does he see for the future? When we come back, we'll continue the conversation with former Congressman Tom Davis, the author of the new book, The Partisan Divide.
We want you to be part of the show. Email us with your financial questions. Ask about the Defense Credit Union Council. Tell us what topics you want to hear about. Or just let us know what's on your mind. We'll give you the address in a few minutes. But now, more of Home and Family Finance with Paul Barry.
And to a great degree, your finances depend upon decisions that are made in Washington, D.C. And those decisions are made by the people that you send to Washington, D.C. But are you sending the person you want there? And is that person being able to be function like you want? My guest is former Congressman Tom Davis. His new book is called The Partisan Divide. And he says, things have changed, folks. All politics ain't local anymore. Tom, the question I have to ask you, because when you were there, you were conservative. You had your issues. But when time came to compromise, you understood the value of it. Is compromise dead?
Well, it's very difficult today because what happens when you compromise or you get the news outlets, you get some of these ideological PAC groups and come in and target you for caving, for selling out or whatever. It's made it much more difficult. I was a whip for TARP, the Troubled Asset Relief Program. It really an ugly vote for members, but I think at the end of the day, a very important vote for the country.
Right.
We had members in the back room saying, I hope this thing passes. And I'd say, great, we really need your vote. And they said, I can't vote for it. So, you just told me you hope it passes. I hope it does pass, but I can't vote for it. Right. I'll never get through a primary with this. I'll never be able to explain this. And that we have a group in Congress now. We say the Hope Yes, Vote No caucus. They get it. They're heroes on cable news. They're heroes, to some of these talk radio shows.
Mm-hmm.
But they're just incapable of producing any legislative outcomes. It's an absolutely perfect outcome, and you never get to that. So the end result is we end up punting on a lot of the big issues, deficits. We're punting on that energy policy,
right.
Immigration, just very hard to come together on what are not easy issues to solve, but 20 years ago would have been resolved.
But Congressman, as you well know, sooner or later, someone has to make a decision. Someone has to say yay or nay. We can't continue to kick the can down the road, or can we?
Well, you do until you get a crisis. And like I said, TARP was a crisis, the Troubled Asset Relief Program. 9/11 was a crisis, and you brought the parties together. But absent a crisis, it's very hard to get anything done unless you get those very strange alignments, which are the exception to the rule, where one party controls the House, the Senate, and the presidency. When those occur, you usually the parties then take the agenda and they run with it, and then the voters knock them out the next time. You're not getting it. In the old days, I say my first term in Congress, Bill Clinton was president. We had a Republican speaker in Newt Gingrich, and we got a lot of stuff done. We had welfare reform. We had 4 years of balanced budgets, and the voters were kind of schizophrenic. My voters in Northern Virginia elected me in 1994 to protect them from Bill Clinton, and 2 years later, they reelected Clinton to protect him from me. But people in those days were voting the person. Today, you're seeing more straight ticket voting than you've seen at any time in the last 100 years.
How can it be that someone like Cantor, Congressman, how can he be a leader? Whether you were Democrat or Republican, you had to respect this guy, or at least. But but he never made it through the primary.
No, well, look, he's a leader in an institution that has a 7% approval rating. That was his identification. And when he starts sitting there cutting agreements, opening up the government, voting to raise the debt ceiling, negotiating on immigration, his primary voters, it angered them.
But he was doing what congressmen are supposed to do, right?
But not the primary voters. That's not what his primary voters wanted. And by the way, they weren't seeing as much of him as they used. He wasn't back there to defend it. Mitch McConnell also had a tough primary, if you remember, but he spent full time and attention and tens of millions of dollars in taking care of business. So it's difficult being a leader today, and Congress is held in low esteem for obvious reasons, even though I think you probably have more really good, solid, educated members than you've had in a long time. But they are in a system where compromise and outcomes are not rewarded. They are punished by primary voters.
My guest is Congressman Tom Davis, former congressman from Virginia. His new book is called The Partisan Divide, Congress in Crisis. So what do you want folks to get from this book? What are we supposed to do here?
Well, I want them to understand, you know, what are the forces that are shaping things and why things are the way they are. There is a certain logic to it. We need to increase participation in primary elections. People put the I voted pin on when they leave the polls on election day in November, but the real election was in the primary in most congressional districts. And even in the Senate, you have states now that are definitively blue and definitively red. You only had four states where the presidential race was within 5 percentage points of out of 50 last time. So we are a divided country in terms of how we live and how we vote.
Wow. And your assessment, where are we going?
Well, look, the good news is in crisis we come together. We're not Greece. We don't punt on it. But absent some kind of crisis, there are no political rewards for getting ahead of things. So we usually let things build up, a pretty good stoking fire before we come in and call in the fire engines.
Congressman Davis, thank you for writing the book, and thanks for being a guest on the show, and come back and see us again soon.
Hey,
would
Paul,
you please?
Thanks a lot.
It's been a pleasure. Congressman Tom Davis' book is called The Partisan Divide. You want to read it. Coming up next, Alex Whalen. You'll want to hear him. This is Home and Family Finance. I'm Paul Berry. Listening to Home and Family Finance on Radio America. I'm your host, Paul Berry, and we thank you for joining us. We continue to ask that question, are you financially fit when it comes to your home, your family, and your future? Our program sponsor, the Defense Credit Union Council and the Credit Union National Association. We thank them both for their continued support on this program dedicated to making all of us financially fit. And if there's a topic or subject that you want to discuss, please write to me here, Paul Berry, Radio America, 1100 North Glebe Road, Suite 900, Arlington, Virginia, 22201. I do want to hear from you. I do want to hear from you. For all of our troops out there, I want to hear from you, too, listening throughout the Armed Forces Radio Network, both in the United States and overseas. I have a question for you. Was one of your New Year's resolutions to get a better handle on your personal finances? I mean, did you really blow it over the holidays, and are you still trying to figure out how to pay off that big holiday bill? Well, mark your calendars for February 23rd through the 28th coming up, because that's Military Saves Week. And it's your chance to take charge of your personal finances. All week long, more than 180 military installations around the globe will be collaborating with nonprofits, on-base credit unions, your on-base personal finance managers, as well as other government agencies to bring you financial education seminars, one-on-one financial coaching, and special incentive financial products. Hey, don't miss this. It's all designed to help you get personal. You get personal to know your money better. And look for more information on militarysaves.org and visit your on-base credit union today. You can't do better than that, folks. You just can't do any better. Save, 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 whether you're in the military or you're not. So are you financially fit is a question. We're always looking for new ways to help educate you and to help you help yourself in terms of what you do, especially when it comes to saving and when it comes to investing and when it comes to making your money work for you. I was really struck by some information I received on a young man by the name of Alex Whalen, or Wallen, and we'll find out how he pronounces it. He's the founder and CEO, and this also caught my eye, Sprinkle Bit. Now, Is he serious? He is deadly serious, folks. Alex held research analyst positions at the Lance Group and JMI Equity, graduated with honors of the highest distinction from the University of California, San Diego. And this company that he's now founded, I want him to tell you about it because he's with us. Alec, welcome to Home and Family Finance.
Thank you, Paul. I'm glad to be here.
Well, we're pleased to have you. Now, Sprinkle Bit, as I understand it, is a platform designed to help people who want to do investing. Is that where we are here?
Yes, it's a social platform to help people to make better investment decisions and really getting into investing and learning by themselves, learning by doing.
Okay, and that's part of what we're saying to people here, is that there are some things that you can do. You know, when it comes to investing or looking at the market or whatever, a lot of people just shy away and say, I don't know a thing about it, nothing I can do about it. I want to know. I understand it's a big part of what I hear every day. The market did this, the market did that. But I don't have a clue what that's all about. Can I learn how to do something in marketing, in stocks from your platform?
Yes, we have a very simple four-step process that we use on the platform. So the first thing you do is that you come in and you see and you learn. So we have this social platform where you can see other people's investments and their motivation behind it. We have SpringBit University where you can read up, and we have 30 chapters where you can read anything about investing that you possibly need. We have a stock market simulator, so you can play around with what we call Sprinkle Bucks, and from there you can learn. And then when you're ready to dip your toes for real, we also have the brokerage platform for you to utilize.
Wow. Now, am I going to understand the language, the words, the terminology? Am I going to really start to get this, or do I have to have some kind of college degree, Alec, to get through this?
Oh, not at all. About 82% of our users are beginners, and they're doing great. They're actually doing better than the market itself. So it really seems like by amplifying the crowdsourced information and social media, you can actually learn this fairly quick.
Why did you do this? What was your motivation?
I started investing when I was 14 years old, and by the time I was 20, I had enough to pay for college, and I always got the question, can you help me with a stock tip? Can you invest my money for me? And I always said, I will never give you a stock tip. I will never take money from you. But what I will do is I will show you my portfolio. I will show you what I'm doing and why I'm investing in what. And that's basically what SprinkleBit is doing now, but amplified by 1,000 different things you can add into it. So in that way, it's helping people help themselves, but also other people to learn from them.
Okay, hold right there. It's called SprinkleBit, and why? When we come back, we'll ask Alec to explain the name and also let you know how you can reach out. This is Home and Family Finance. Are you financially fit?
You be safe, smart, and secure with your finances. Welcome back to Home and Family Finance with your host, Paul Berry.
Okay, folks, it's called SprinkleBit. My guest is Alec Wallen. He is the founder of this social site. Let me read something here. It says, what makes SprinkleBit an especially disruptive platform is that it is making the financial markets more accessible and easier to understand for everyone by utilizing the latest technology, social platforms, and proprietary algorithms to put investment information at your fingertips. Wow, Alex, is that true?
Yes. We're really trying to do the hard work and make the complicated thing so it looks really easy for the user. Imagine the same way as Apple is doing. Their products are really complex when you get into it, but a two-year-old can use it. It's the same thing with SprinkleBit. We use all these complex things, but when you use it, it's very simple.
Okay, and why SprinkleBit? Why that name?
So Sprinkle, of course, is to distribute, and Bit is computer language for information. So the whole premises of SprinkleBit is to distribute information. And as you know from the old movie Wall Street from, I think it was 1987, where Gordon Gekko said, the most valuable commodity I know is information.
Yeah.
And that's what we're bringing to it.
Well, information is so important, especially if you can understand it when you receive it. So tell me now, what is it going to cost me here? I mean, how many billions are you making by making me register with this company or having me register with the company and make some money? How does this work?
Yes. So we don't make money unless you make money. That's pretty much how it is. So it's free to sign up. You can learn as much as you want and play around with the SprinkleBit. And if you want to get a little bit more into depth with education, you just become a premium member. That's $9.95. And when you're ready to dip your toes in and investing for real, we have a full-fledged brokerage. It's $8 per trade. And everything else is just there for your taking.
Okay. So it's a participatory platform or site. How big is it? How many people do you have involved in the program now?
So right now we have about 7,000 clients and users, and we're growing every day. So by the end of the year, we're hoping to have at least 100,000.
Okay. Okay. And so let me understand it. You said the original cost is $9.99. What was it? How much?
The original cost is free. So
okay.
It's free to sign up. It's free to be part of the community, unless you want to have the premium, where basically you get additional education, you
okay.
get additional tools, you even get a little financial advisor that's it's basically a computer-aided financial advisor to help you to sell if something is over or undervalued.
Okay.
And you get all of that for $9.95 a month.
$995 a month?
No, $9.95.
God bless you, Alec.
It's like paying for Spotify, but better.
Okay, $9.95 a month, folks. So if you heard the $9.95 and I did, and I was like, oh my goodness, but $9.95 is certainly at least a reasonable sum, I would think, for most of us, not for everyone. And then if you want to get, and then what was the $8? There was something else. There was another charge.
Yes. So once you dip your toes in and invest for real, it's $8 per trade.
Okay.
So it's right there in the middle with the competition.
Okay. So affordable, and you learn in the process, and people.
Yes.
Now, who are the people most likely? And I think it's important for my audience. Who are the people that are most likely to say, "Okay, I want to do this"? Describe that person to me.
Yes, there's actually two types. So let me explain both.
Okay.
The first type we have is the one that wants to learn, the beginner that always said, I want to know how to invest, I'm going to learn how to invest, but I don't know how. Those are the ones that seek to come to SprinkleBit. So that's the first persona.
Okay.
The second persona are the ones that have been around for a while and been investing and looking for this informational edge or even showing off how good they are, because we have a leaderboard you can show. Basically, this is my return for this year and things like that.
Okay. All right. So if I were interested, where would I go and how would I make contact and what should I do?
Yes. Yeah, so just go to SprinkleBit.com, sign up for a free account, and start playing around.
And start playing around with funny money, right? I mean, not your real dollars, but money that that you play with to see how you do.
Yes, so you get started with 5,000 SprinkleBit, and the reason why we do 5,000 is because you should really see how your personal finances work. So it's not you get this 100,000 and it doesn't compare to when you get started.
Yeah, okay. So what you're saying, look, you're more likely to invest $5,000, so if you're going to invest, so why not have that much in SprinkleBit money and then try that, and then you can compare and see how you do.
Yes.
I think it's a great concept for people who, I know lots of you out there like me didn't know a thing about the market or don't know anything about it, except you see all that stuff every day and you want to do something. How many sites are out there like now today? Do we know like your site or along the same lines?
So the way that I see it, that what we've built is a complete platform. So you can find a little bit of this, a little bit of that on other places. So, for example, you can go to Investopedia for your education. You can go to E-Trade for your trading. You can go to StockPlits for information on stocks. There's no place where you can put everything together, and that's what we really put into a neat package. And I know you were talking about being financially fit, Paul. What I like to say about financially fit, we compare that to being physically fit, because you have to overcome that fear of investing. The same thing, you have to overcome those excuses to get started. You have to learn what to do. You have to have that discipline to get 15 minutes a day or something like that to really look at it. And you need to get that motivation that you get from your social circle, and also you need tracking to keep up with that score. So that's what we're really trying to do to get you financially fit.
Well, it's a wonderful concept, I think, in terms of people understanding what they need to do, what they really need to do. Alex, it's a pleasure to have you on the program. I really appreciate you talking to us about, you know, how this thing works, and good luck with folks coming in. Come back and see us again and let us know how things are working, would you?
Thank you, Paul. And just one last thing.
Yeah.
What we're trying to do is to make investing into a team sport, because I think we can do it.
I bet you can do it. You going to come back and join me again, would you?
Yes.
Okay. All right, man. Loved having you on the program. Alec Walden is my guest. SprinkleBit, folks. You go to SprinkleBit.com. See what you can do. And give us a call and let us know how it works for you. Coming up next, we're going to be talking with Jody about your mom and dad. Your mom and dad, yes. This is Home and Family Finance. Are you financially fit?
We want you to be part of the show. Email us with your financial questions. Ask about the Defense Credit Union Council. Tell us what topics you want to hear about. Or just let us know what's on your mind. We'll give you the address in a few minutes. But now, more of Home and Family Finance with Paul Berry.
And you know, no matter your age, I'm reminded of a story a few years ago. I went and visited my uncle in Chicago, Uncle Jim, and he was up a ladder, and he was reaching over for something, and there was another young man in the office who started laughing because my uncle was a little bit shaky up on that ladder trying to get across, but he was in his 60s, late 60s, and my uncle looked down at this guy who was laughing at him, and he said these words, "Son, just keep living." And I've never forgotten that. It's going to happen to all of us. Just keep living. If you're lucky, it's going to happen to you. So we all have to be concerned about our elder care finances. What's going to happen to you? Are you looking after that now, folks? Are you saving? Are you putting away? Are you dealing with retirement? And what about mom and dad? Are you making sure that they are not going to rob you when they reach an age where they have to be taken care of? All of these things are something that Jody, a guest friend, is aware of. She is my guest. She is, well-respected in this business of elder care, and not just elder care. She is vice president of senior care services. That's care.com. She is a licensed clinical social worker with more than 25 years of experience in the field of elder care. And whether you like it or not, all of us are going to become caregivers in some form or fashion. Jody, that's true, isn't it?
Pretty much it is. And, you know, usually at some point people are going to care for their aging parents, their relatives, their spouse or partner, or actually need care themselves. So it's an issue that ultimately will affect all of us.
Yeah, and I think that's true. Even if I mean that if you're not caring for somebody else, you're caring for yourself, and you've got to do the right thing. What mistakes are we making now that somehow hinder us from being good elder care providers later?
Well, you know, Paul, this is a really tough issue because most of your listeners out there are probably just struggling to take care of their kids, get to work, deal with all the responsibilities on their plate day to day. And most people don't think, hey, I need to be having conversations with my parents in the event that they aren't going to be able to take care of themselves. It's something that seems like it's far off in the future.
And Jody, how do you even broach that subject? I mean, you're right, but, you know, Mike, just even saying that to mom and dad can be an insult to them, no?
Well, it can be. So that's why we advise that people are very cautious about confronting parents in a way that takes away their independence.
Okay.
And what we suggest is that you have a conversation over time. It's not one discussion. It's a series of discussions. And really approach it in the way that you are trying to understand what they are worried about. You are trying to understand what plans they might have thought of. And to keep in mind, what I always say is all plans are etched in Jell-O. Because they will change as the needs of your loved ones change.
Right, right. One of the things that I did with my mother, who was with me for a couple of years, never dreamed that she would be, but she was. But early on, I said to her, Mom, let's have an elder care fund. And she said, what is that? I said, well, I said, I know you're saving. I said, but I want to help save with you. So, Jody, what I did was I matched her dollar for dollar, a month for month, and put together her elder care slush fund, as I called it. Initially, she was reluctant, but she said, okay. So she'd send me over $10 or $50 or whatever, and I would match that because at the time I could. And you know what? It grew, Jody, into a pretty substantial amount of money, enough that she thanks me every month for the dollars that she has in her little elder care slush fund. That's one way that we can kind of – and then I was able to talk to her. And what I – the point being is that after we started doing this – I could talk to her about money without an insult.
Right,
it was an automatic,
right.
You know. Go ahead.
That's great that you did that and you thought ahead and you came up with a plan. Most families are not coming up with a plan, and many families aren't even in a position to be able to do that.
Yeah.
So what I suggest is first just learn the landscape. Find what is the difference between Medicare and Medicaid. Do your parents have long-term care insurance, or should they think about it? Was your parent a veteran like my dad, mm-hmm. who had dementia and was in a nursing home for many years? We ended up transferring him to a soldier's home, and instead of paying $9,000 a month for a private pay nursing home, we paid $900 a month.
Wow.
And that's a big difference.
It
but
is.
We had to understand the resources, and we had to get him on a long waiting list, and we had to be really persistent. So some of this is really about educating yourself ahead of time.
Okay, and that's a very valid point that you need to know in terms of what not only what's out there, but also what they want to do. I mean, that's important if you want their cooperation. What do they want to do, right?
Exactly. And, you know, it's best not to say, look, Mom, if you don't get help soon, you're probably going to end up in a nursing home. Oftentimes, adult children are so filled with fear and anxiety, they project that onto the parent. It's better to say, you know, I'm a little worried about you and Dad. You're doing okay now, but one day you may not be able to manage the house all by yourself, or you may not be able to drive yourself as much as you do now.
Jody Gasperin is my guest. When we come back, we'll talk more about that and about how you, you know, start to developing the approaches that are going to make the elderly years for your parents and for yourself much brighter. This is Home and Family Finance. I'm Paul Berry. Family Finance, I'm your host, Paul Berry. I ask the question because it's a question that you must answer. Are you financially fit, and will you be years from now when your mom and dad are living with you? Or will they be able to have enough resources that they don't have to drain you? That's what happens. Nobody knows that any better than Jody Gastfriend. She's Vice President of Senior Care Services. She sees this every day as people face issues that they have not properly planned for. And what it really amounts to is thinking about it now, discussing it with folks now, both Look, I didn't expect to be a caregiver at all, Jody. I really didn't. I don't know. My mother just was always so independent. And all of a sudden, woof, she crashed. And she couldn't do this or do that. And she came and lived with us for 2.5 years. It was an experience. It was a real experience. She's now living in Cleveland with my sister. As we kind of, you know, take her here and take her there wherever she wants to be. But something has to be done, and you have to prepare for it, right?
Yeah, and most people end up making decisions in the midst of a crisis, which is actually the worst time have to make a decision. I always say, you know, don't expect to make good decisions in the emergency room. So part of what is a challenge for people is finding out information ahead of time, having conversations ahead of time. And if you're in the workplace, like so many caregivers are, find out from your employer, are there any resources that they offer? More and more employers are waking up and saying, hey, I've got this pool of people who are caring for either aging parents or other family members. And if I don't support them, guess what? They're not going to be able to do their jobs.
Yeah, that's exactly right. In other words, it's we're talking about, and we say it, and this is a perfect example. It takes a village. You may not know the parents, but you know the son or daughter that works for you, great workers, but they can't do their job if they're worried about taking care of their parents, and they can't do their job if they're running out of finances and dollars to look after themselves. So where do I go to get all of this? How can I – is there a one-stop shop, or how do I do this, Judy? How do I find out what I need to know?
Well, that's a very important question. I have some recommendations for your listeners. One is the company I work for, Care.com, has a great range of resources for caring across the lifespan, from child care to pet care to household help to senior care. You just go to the website, Care.com. Also, you can go to eldercare.gov and find out the area agency on aging in your particular area. And they have great resources for caregivers. There's a 1-800 number you can call and speak to someone to get help for your parent or a family member wherever they live. Also, to find out about financial issues, I suggest people check out Medicare.gov. There's a lot of information on that site about Medicare and Medicaid, but it's actually really well laid out, and you can really learn something. And talk to people who've gone through it, because people who've gone through it have made their own mistakes, they've learned from them, and they're a wealth of information.
Folks, I hope you heard. Jody Gast, friend, has just given you the remedy to the problem. And I mean that. If you go to these agencies and find out, if you ask questions, if you get the answers, if you start the working the process, guess what? And it's going to happen. Nobody's getting any younger. So folks, you have to do something, and you have to start now, because time is short. And you think you've got plenty of time, and all of a sudden, you're on it. And God forbid, something that can happen to you as well. So you have to really jump out there and say, okay, I've got to take this serious. Who's going to look after mom and dad? If you got brothers and sisters, you guys have got to have that discussion. If it's just you, it's going to be just you. You care about them. You're not going to just let them rot out there. You've got to deal with the issue, and especially if they haven't dealt with it themselves. It happens every day, and Jody, I know you see it. Somebody comes in, and they're all upset because they've dealing with an issue that you've been dealing with for years.
Yeah, an analogy I sometimes give is when a child is born, what is one of the first things we start thinking about or planning for? It's, oh, got to save some money for college and for the child as they get older.
Right.
And we kind of know what those costs might look like.
Yeah.
We don't think that way with senior care. And the average cost of a nursing home in this country is over $85,000 a year. A in-home caregiver is about $20 an hour, and that adds up quickly. So, and most of that is paid for out of pocket.
Folks, Jody Gastfrin, Vice President of Senior Care Services, you can find her at care.com. Jody, thanks so much for coming on the program. Would you come back? Because this is an ever-growing problem. I want to have the conversation with you again.
My pleasure.
Thank you so much for being with us. Folks, thank you for joining us here. Al Peterson, our engineer, thank you so much. And we really enjoy having you here. Come back. We'll be right here again next week.